House operator, please hold for President Fox. Scotty, how the hell are you? How's my favorite Brit?
Yeah, well, I am well, thank you. What? Pip, pip, toot-a-poo? Or something of that nature. Oh, dear. President Fox, John, you have many flaws, but I still think you make a better candidate than either you're currently being offered.
It's quite possible. You know, there's that great psychedelic first song, President Gas is President Guess Again.
Yeah, but anyway, at wish of not wanting to offend all of our user, listener, whichever they are, are we being used? Are we using them? There is a question that maybe we need to answer with political statements. We should probably steer clear of that one.
We will. There's nothing fraught with any sort of discussion. But I think, Scotty, since the last, I don't know, 27 episodes have all been about me, I think it's time that we start letting you talk about me instead.
Okay, fair enough, John.
No,
well,
Scotty.
I have this. I know this folk called John, and he works on this app where he seems to have continual issues with not knowing what he's working on and being able to talk about it.
Oh, Scotty, that's so mean. No, but I think when we left on last episode's cliffhanger, you were saying, "Well, okay, I can't get into that now," or something to that effect, meaning that you basically what you're saying is that you sucked all the oxygen out of the room, and next week maybe I can try and spark a flame.
Do you know what? I have no idea what we were speaking about last week. I cannot remember in the slide. We did our WWDC review.
We did.
No. Wow. Do you have thought I could have done some prep by maybe listening to last week's show again, really, shouldn't I? There we are. I didn't. But anyway, we could talk about what I've been doing. I've started a new application. Yeah, I've been talking for many months about, I think I remember a little bit what we talked about last week. Talking for many months about, it is very, very unclear from Apple how you should go around starting new Mac applications. And I'm not necessarily starting a new Mac application, but wanted that option. But I think we did discuss last week that the lack of mention of Catalyst now for 2 years, maybe. And although there's been no big mention of multi-platform apps still, basically multi-platform is still a template option within Xcode, the new Xcode. Obviously, SwiftUI is being enhanced and developed for the Mac. So I think reading between the lines, you know, without Apple ever saying anything, because they never do. If you want to do a Mac app in that way, sort of a Swift UI or multi-platform app is the way to go. I don't know how long. Catalyst might be one of these things that's around for years. It's not quite at the same level of Carbon when that was around, because that was like essential, whereas Catalyst has not necessarily been essential. But it's going to be interesting to see whether it just goes into obscurity or whether it just tinkers along, bouncing along quite happily for a long, long time. So anyway, yes, we've started working on MoneyWell for iPad, basically. So we have no idea what it's going to be called yet. Probably MoneyWell. And as I've said for a long, long time, MoneyWell is a very old code base. It has a core data model that, let's shall we say, you wouldn't create that way these days. So one of the issues we have, obviously, is we would want the new application to work with iPad, to work with the current application, so that effectively means to go this way, we need to continue to use Core Data and probably the Core Data model we have, because, to be quite honest, the way the Core Data is merged in with all of the sort of view controllers and everything in the current app means sort of like ripping Core Data out. It's not like you can go to one place. You know, in a well-designed app, you would hope that all the database stuff was in one place. You could go and you could rip Core Data out and replace it with something else. And yes, you'd have to loads of work of reconnecting things, but but that becomes fairly obvious. Whereas when your fetch requests and everything are all over your view controllers and everywhere else, you know, taking anything out becomes a complete bit of a minefield, especially when you're using Objective-C, where taking things out and they no longer exist tends to turn into a warning and not an error. And when the app has already got hundreds of warnings because of different deprecations and all the rest of it and age of stuff, you know, it's quite easy in an old code base just to miss stuff, and it can go terribly wrong. So the process we're going through at the moment is now is, do we just accept that we take the core data framework we have, the core data model we have? Yes, we wouldn't design it that way, but it has been working for many, many years. Stick it into this brand new app on iPad, rewrites all the stuff in there in iPad using this, and then we'll have natural syncing between this and the current version of of Moneywell. But in doing so, we will rewrite all of the core data wrappers and all of the core data queries, the fetch requests, in a way that within this app they are all manageable and in a place where they could be replaced in the future. And then at some point in the future, when the app is released and done, if we've done it as a multi-platform app, we could then go ahead as the next stage and replace the Mac UI using multi-platform in there once we get a few years down the line, and maybe we can start saying, we can support a version of macOS where the Swift UI will do the job well enough, and we can do that. And then once everything is in the one multi-platform app, we can begin to swap out core data or remodel the core data because it's now in a way that, you know, we're not having to worry about it being all over the place and wrapped up. You know, but yeah, you know, we're in a far new project. We're just playing with things, you know. And like I do all the time, I am a fantastic procrastinator when it comes to choosing technologies. And before we finish this app, we'll probably have chosen 17 different technologies that have been through it before we end up back with core data where we started. Swift data is a thin wrapper around core data. And this is where, again, discussion we have. I've not heard too much since DubDub this year, which is probably a sign of it. But basically, most of what I heard about Swift data from its first release last year was it's unusable. It just doesn't work. It has too many problems. I've not seen lots this year of, oh, wow, Swift data is all fixed. So whether that's just because it's quietly done that and everyone's expecting it, or because it's not really, you know, everyone's given up, I don't know. Equally, and this is just hearsay and rumor and, you know, tittle tattle from a whole bunch of different people, but, you know, Swift data released it dubbed this year. You could basically change the underlying database, so it no longer has to be core data. You can create your own provider. I can't remember. I don't think that's the name they call it. I can't remember off the top of my head what they call it. And there has been a suggestion that the reason that that's been done is because Apple also intend to and replace the underlying database as well and make core data go away, which I think is interesting if that is true, and surprising, because I know people moan a lot about core data and it probably doesn't use it, but it's got, you know, 15 years of technology in it now, and on the whole it does work pretty well. Most of the problems people have with core data is because they're not using core data properly, not because core data doesn't work, or they're not using it in the way it's intended and designed to work. So I think, yeah, and equally for us, you know, we're a small company. There's only a few of us working on stuff. We need to sometimes make choices. It means we actually get something out the door. Whereas if we just stick with our current model and core data for now, we can get an iPad app out the door in X. Whereas if we decide to replace everything, not only do we obviously have to do it in the iPad app, we need to make the Mac app compatible, which means we either need to work out some bridging layer or actually do go into that and change things. So I think the let's make a our currently is let's make the iPad app And it will be a new iOS app as app, but the iPad first app. Let's make the iPad app work with the current model, sync with Mac, then gradually migrate the Mac UI into the same app. And then when everything is in there, which is hopefully in a reasonably clean, segregated code base, replacing the data layer with Swift data or something else in the future is less of a problem, can be managed in one go, and than the rest of it. So yeah, that's like the next 5-year plan, because that's probably how long all that's going to take to do. What we have is we've written a lot of code in MoneyWell over the last couple of years that is reasonably well segmented in folders and things like this. And we've kept it all in one project. We use Xcode build currently to build our Xcode project. We don't have an Xcode project checked in because Xcode projects are terrible for working with source control and conflicts and needing to be resolved. So we generate the Xcode projects on the fly using Xcode build each time based on folder structures. But we have got a lot of things like our logging that we do, our analytics that we do, we have several libraries of things that we've written to do. So yeah, it's now a case of separating those out into Swift packages and making them work in both apps and seeing if we can get some genuine code reuse going. So that's been my last couple of weeks, really, alongside client work, which is still takes up a good portion of the time, if not the majority, is trying to take out code from the existing MoneyWell that's in Swift, turn it into packages, clean it up, take the opportunity to clean it up at the same time, because that will benefit both apps, and make it work. And do that way. So yeah, it's going to be fun, because we've decided that the iPad app will be support the iPad OS 18. That is the one that's coming up in September, isn't it? Yeah, we'll set that is that one, because by the time we get out the door, it's going to probably be at least a year anyway. So we might as well just take benefit of everything we've got now and do it. So hopefully it means over the next 12 months, I'll be playing with lots of new stuff UI-wise and things, and making it work. And we'll be able to be one of the cool kids again. That's excellent, because really most people don't think I'm anything like a kid anyway. I'm just an old man now, but there we are. I did. I'm the cool old man. There we are. So, yeah, so I'm quite looking forward to that. It will be, I think we're going to be frustrated. There'll be lots of swearing. But I think the opportunity, it's been a long time. It's going to be a bit of a contrast, actually. Because we will continue to work in the Mac code base, because there's stuff we still need to do, which can be as much as, Objective-C tables with, NSCL renders. I think the main in MoneyWell, when you're looking at a transaction, you can either have like a traditional table view with columns, or there's like this like nice laid out view, which you these days you do all in Swift UI and make it laid out. But this and as you expand and close, expand and stretch MoneyWell, it reorders itself and lays itself out. The layout becomes slightly different depending on how much space it's got. Everything we'd have done with auto layout, possibly in AppKit, 5 years ago, now you'd be doing with Swift UI and let it all do. This stuff is 6,000 lines of draw text code to make it work. And so we don't touch anything in that view. So we said, would it be nice to have this in this view? We said, yeah, might be, but I'm not touching those 6,000 lines of code. So it will give us an opportunity to maybe, at least in the iPad app, change some of the things that we're doing and look at it. And it makes me realize as well that because I've not necessarily looked at developing for the iPad for a long time, because the vast majority of my work for the last 6 or 7 years has been Mac or iPhone, definitely iPhone focused apps that really, yes, they'll run an iPad, but they've been iPhone focused. So I've realized I probably don't, and I know it's only been a couple of years since iPad OS became its own thing outside of just being iOS on there. Yeah, I do need to go back to through some dub videos and catch up on how you're supposed to write an iPad app now and how it's supposed to look and what the design paradigms are supposed to be, because I have to be honest, I don't really know. How do you, this is a question, do you, and you probably can't tell me lots of details, but just at high level, you know, with iPad Netflix and iOS Netflix, do you have very different design focuses and for the platform, or is it really just one focus because it's iOS? You know, how do you handle those sort of things?
The original Netflix app was an iPad app, way back when. And for a while we had kind of distinct code paths and some separate nib files. I mean, that's way back. These days, it's like I would say that we're a reasonably good citizen on iPad. We don't take advantage of all the things that iPad could do, like, I forgot the term for it, where you can kind of, put two apps side by side, which, was a clever thing that Apple did over the long run for to make Vision OS apps easier to build. So it's kind of, it's driven on usage, so it's, I think, it, as I said, it's kind of, it's well-behaved. It's not the world's most awesome iPad app. And there's regularly discussion about that, but these days it's in order to make sure that the iPad functionality and good citizenship is maintained, there was a lot of effort that was made to be able to make it work, make things work properly and adapt infrastructure designs to work properly. And I think, I will take some credit some time ago for really pushing hard to make sure we respect preferred content size, because that makes things a whole lot easier if you're already, into the idea of resizing cells in a collection view, et cetera, that you could adjust for different sizes, and people had to make assumptions about that. And so I think I don't know if that answers the question firmly. I kind of have to tread carefully here.
Always treading carefully, yes. Yes. Yeah. So hopefully over the next couple of months, I can be one of those trend, cool podcasts where we talk about things that are current instead of NSL or whatever else.
There's the title, Break Me Out of My NSL.
Yes. Something like that would be the case of it. The hope is, because the Mac is behind on SwiftUI, and not because there are features in SwiftUI that are on iOS that aren't on Mac, because actually the platforms are fairly comparable with each release. However, obviously, the UI demands of the Mac are far more complicated, and it sometimes takes a while for, example, a table view or a list, for example, that will work on both platforms to start gaining the features that make it more, Mac OS like. But hopefully, by time because we try and be very conservative in. So the operating systems we support, I think Big Sur, so that was that Mac OS 11 is what we currently support. We're considering, for a few Swift UI reasons, pushing to Mac OS 12 as our minimum. But that's still quite a few versions old. But hopefully by the time we get to the point of shifting the Mac application into this one, we'll be able to adopt, the level that we'd have adopted around now will be a few years down the line. And of course, if we've kept the same model, people could stay on the old version of the Mac app for a few years after that while we're doing it as well. So, yeah, as a Mac developer, you have to be, well, I think traditionally people have been far more conservative with how they push for the new stuff. There are some companies that constantly push to the new. And I guess if when you take the app, when you buy the app in the first place, that is the ethos. The app is already set. They were always going to try and do the new stuff. But an app like ours, case which has been around a long time and traditionally not, I think it's quite difficult to just say, well, we're going for all the new stuff. Although, in fairness, I would say well over 60%, or getting on for 60% of our users are running the latest version of macOS. And then, you know, the vast majority are then in one or two releases behind that. And, you know, macOS 11, I think we're under 2%. And macOS 12, I think, is less than 5%. So, you know, it's not, you know, it's... and we have a, you have to, there's a difference as well. And I don't know how other Mac developers deal with this, but you know, there's a case of when you look at analytics, it will tell you which version of macOS people are booting on, but it will also tell you what device they're running on. And there's quite a lot of cases where, yes, people might be running macOS 11, but they're running on a device that could run macOS 14, for example, because it's not going out there. So it's not a case of, well, this is the amount of users we'd lose, because a lot of those users may just be able to update their OS. You know, they may be holding back just because they don't do OS updates. They may have one particular piece of software, particularly if they're in like audio or something, that has to go back to that version because it, whatever, I don't know. I guess the machines can. So it's a, but at some point we move on. But we try not to move on just for the sake that we can use cool technology. We move on because there's a benefit that affects far more people. And we've started to use, I know I really am waffling a lot of stuff. We've started to introduce some features where we just say, well, if you are running a newer version of macOS, then you'll see this feature. And if you're not, you just won't see the feature. Because Manuel is at the stage that, you know, the core is there. If you never have another feature again, then for many users, that's fine, as long as it keeps working. So you can add a feature and say, yep, this new feature is only in, you know, if you run this version of macOS. Although we have just rewritten, or in the process of rewriting, the very main configuration screen within the app, where you set up your budget in the first place and your spending plan. That's all been rewritten in Swift UI. I believe supporting macOS 11, if I'm right, might be 12, in there. And so, yeah, that'll be new shiny for everybody. And we'll see how much that breaks everybody's lives.
Well, if you can't break out of your NSL, you at least break everyone's life.
Yeah. I think I've said this a lot of times before, but we are a budgeting app, but I would say it's actually only a small portion of our user base use us as a budgeting app. A lot of people use us as a transaction tracking app, which is a big difference. You know, transaction tracking is looking back at your past to see what you did, whereas budgeting is looking to your future to see what you can and can't do going forward. I'm going to be totally honest. I don't know why people use this as a transaction tracking app, because they will be apps that are a lot better at than we are, because it's their focus. And in fairness, the way that Manuel has traditionally started and opened, it sort of almost encourages you to be a transaction tracking app, not a budgeting app, even though that's what we are. So there's a lot of focus going into, it probably won't be the next release, but a couple of releases time when we put it out to really, you know, for first time experiences, now this is now setting all your budget up. Let's make this right in your face that, you know, you have to make very explicit calls to not set a budget up, as opposed to just import your bank transactions. That will be like the last thing you do, not the first thing you do. So there we are. There we are, John. I think I have waffled on for long enough there. So feel free to say something to bemoan, you know, to sympathize with the listener who's just had to listen to that, add your own content here where you see fit.
Well, I, you know, on the theme of bringing things forward, I can talk a little bit about some things that I, you know, happened in the last week that I'm pretty proud of, you know. So when I joined Netflix, lo, these many years ago, back in, you know, almost nine years ago in November, at that point, there was been a complete top-to-bottom rewrite of the app. And at that time, it was all the new shiny, which meant Objective-C and UI Kit and Zibs. And, you know, we have since kind of rewritten huge parts of the code base. It's gone through lots of different transitions. But the fundamental thing is that it was a pretty monolithic application. And in the intervening time, when you do other things like add games and start to want to have multiple app targets, some of the decisions that were perfectly fine decisions back in the day become a little bit difficult. And then you add on that, you know, the interest in being able to build new canvases using the latest technology, meaning Swift UI, and also kind of use more modern techniques of modular code and packages, and Swift Package Manager, you know, it was given lots of guff. It was you know, great when it came out, and it's slowly gotten better. It still has some headaches, and if you have an application or, you know, a project with a lot of packages, switching branches, for example, can be a real pain in the buttocks. But you know, whatever problems you have with that are you know, pale in comparison to the benefits you have for modular code. And so the thing I'd been working on for more than a year, which is, you know, well into its test, and knock on wood, is looking good, so I'm happy about that. But it is a type of service built into the main application that can touch lots of different canvases because of it by nature of it being a service that lots of, you know, we'll leave it at that. And, you know, since bunches of new canvases and new features are done with packages, those packages themselves are not part of the direct compile target of the main application. So it would know nothing, you know, a package that implements a brand new canvas that's hosted all Swift UI, it wouldn't know anything about, you know, the main application, nor should it. But therein lies the rub. You know, in more recent times, in order to you know, there is this fundamental problem about how does a button, how does a view, how does a canvas somewhere in one part of the application know about other parts of the application? You know, and it's a kind of an age-old problem. So you can hang things off of your application, you know, subclass. You can create singletons. You can have services. You can there, you know, all sorts of different ways. And we were very pragmatic about it because there were just things that needed to be done. If I want to tap a button and begin playback, well, you know, you have to kind of prepare a request and then pass that request off to something. And that something is usually something hanging off of the app controller. And so after I made this service and it's starting to get traction, part of the idea about it was like you have to get the baseline functionality working, and then you can start sprinkling in connections to this new service. And that's, you know, the phase of the project that I've been in now for the last couple of weeks, kind of saying, hey, these are some directions we could go, and let's do a little research. Let's build some functionality that internally we can test and play with. And I did something, you know, I landed that to people this Monday, and it really sparked a lot of imagination. People were really thrilled with it, so that makes me very happy. But the way I had to do it was not as nice as it would like to be. And as it turns out, you know, my stunning colleague and buddy was working on something to handle the question of dependency injection, which covers, you know, it's a big aspect of modern app architecture because it allows you to build things that are much more easily testable and allows you to have this nice separation. But what's funny about it is like the way that you would invoke the service right now in the monolithic app is that you'd use static methods. That's kind of how I got around the no singletons thing. So basically you have a service and you make these static function calls and everything's great, you know, and I'm proud of it and it worked really well. But the dependency injection system has to be able to basically make some decisions at runtime because you can't compile it, so you have to define protocols, and the compiler will be satisfied with a protocol declaration, but at runtime you have to have an implementation of that protocol, and so you have to figure out how to map that. And when I was on Slack chatting with him about it, and he's describing, you know, the challenge that he has, I'm like going, bring back the good old days of NS string from class in ID. And he goes, yeah, it was so much easier back then. I was like, yeah. And is it? But I know that you're joking. I was like, well, I'm actually only half joking. And the thing about it is, in the end, to solve this problem of how do you compile something to satisfy the compiler, but then hook things up at runtime, you know, of course, that's something Objective-C was innately capable of. And it did it, you know, I think very well. It's just that people went to excess with it. And I remember you telling me that, you know, coming into some client work where there was no defined class for anything, everything was ID.
Yep. Oh, I remember that project. And then it would be cast to whatever they liked with no checks.
Exactly.
Had a few bugs in the app.
Yeah. So, you know, in the end, basically what this system does is it just basically means a registry, and that basically your package, your code, it basically everything gets implemented in a package, and you have an implementation, you have a protocol, and then you register yourself. And then there's a lookup. So basically, you know, saying it will then know how to deliver a single instance of a class where it, at runtime, it figures out which class to do with. And so the net effect of it is that we've swapped one set of reference, you know, dependencies for another. Basically, a dependency that can span, you know, basically only depends on there being, you know, a runtime application off of which you can hang this this dependency manager. And I think it works out well. But it was just like one of these cases where to make the code changes, you touch a lot of files, you know, and a lot of the work was done using some things that Xcode is pretty good at, of renaming things and figuring out all the different places where it is, and then careful use of search and replace, and then eagle eyes while you're looking at the PR, and then running tests, and then kind of manual tests to make sure that, you know, it all works out. But it looks very scary at first. But we've made it through. I think we've made it through, you know, knock on wood. Anyway, so that's what's occupied my thought for the last 7 or so days since we last spoke. But so far, so good.
Excellent. I think this, you know, the past is good. The past was bad. This is whatever. It's quite interesting. I mean, it wasn't that long ago I was saying, you know, I don't know much about Swift UI, and I still don't know that much about Swift UI and putting stuff, but I've worked quite a lot in Swift UI, you know, the last year, really, even though I realize everything I've been doing is reasonably basic, because Matt has been rewriting the cache plan manager for in Swift UI that I was talking about for Moneywell, so I've not been doing that. He's been swearing a lot and saying how much he hates Swift UI, so I'm guessing, you know, there's some challenges there. But, you know, the stuff I've been doing in Swift UI has been, on the whole, pretty simple, and it's now feeling very comfortable. And, you know, just today I was to write some UI kit code where it's in an app that doesn't use zibs or storyboards, and so all of the views are put together by, you know, using, you know, constraints in code and adding subviews and all the rest of it. And, you know, that's what I did for many, many years, bread and butter, bread it. And I was there thinking today, oh my word, I can't hardly remember how to do this. How do I set that constraint in the right way in code? And, oh no, I forgot to add that to the subview. And it's almost like, without even realizing it, it's like, you know, it feels like hard work now. Even though Swift UI has loads of problems and I fight with it, the old way feels like hard work. And it's almost like it's the same transition from Objective-C to C. I'm definitely going to C to Swift. There came a point when going back to the Objective-C started to feel difficult. And now it feels very difficult when I write Objective-C. But I try to avoid it as much as I can. It is absolutely fantastic that you can add an extension to an Objective-C class in Swift and then write new functions in Swift. It's one of the best things ever. Yeah, so it's just interesting how things that were the bread and butter, the norm, become hard work. But at the same time, sometimes you just think, when you're sat there, you know, with type safety in Swift, as you just said, oh, if I could just make this ID, mm-hmm. and not care. So there is a glimmer of goodness from the past as well. And talking about a glimmer of goodness, John, we should probably let people go. A glimmer of hope sparkling in your near future. That's all I can say.
Well, Scotty, if people want to exercise their glimmer of hope by throwing you into a room with Matt and Sam, and basically say do not leave this room until you have a rewrite, you know, how might they do that?
Well, they can do that on Mastodon, where I am MacDevNet at mastodon.social. But if I'm not allowed to leave this room until we've done a rewrite, then Better write a goodbye note to my wife and children. So it's in there. And John, if people want to just celebrate your awesomeness and the fact that that you are just a pillar of our community, how should they do that?
Well, they should lie about that on a place where we are, drowning in a sea of truths. And that's where you'll find me as Djembe, D-J-E-M-B-E, like the West African drum, Djembe at mastodon.social. Or if you want to find me on Threads, I'm John Fox.
I almost signed up to Threads. Almost. Only because I accidentally pressed a link that was two Threads and it took me to the app in the App Store. And I almost pressed install and then I didn't.
Do it, Scotty. Do it. Go on.
I don't need it. So there we are, talking about things we don't need. Listener, you don't need to continue listening to us today. Your duty is done. You have done your stint for the community. You have done your good for the week, for society, by taking your turn at listening to us waffle on. Thank you for doing so. We look forward to next time it is your turn to do so. Hopefully, for your benefit, that's not too soon. But thanks for listening, and until next time,
you take care.